and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalzell. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to the fifth episode of the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. There is no Henry this week. He's snowed under with work. So it's just me and Josh this evening with you. And we are, we're a little bit disappointed with what happened on Saturday. Would that be about right, Josh?
Yeah. Disappointed's a good word for it. But I mean, you can't be completely crestfallen because we did play very, very well for what consolation that's worth, which is obviously nothing in the grand scheme. But it's still promising to see what we were able to do.
Yeah, it was an odd one. I was on Twitter quite a lot on the Saturday evening after the game, and the discussion really was that it felt to me like that was almost Arsenal's best performance of the season. And yet they lost 3-1, so it was a little bit odd. What else did you get up to at the weekend, football or non-football related?
Well, I missed the first half of the United game because I was called away to the emergency room because...
Oh, dear.
Yes, a loved one of mine was sent to the ER. So I did the typical loved one thing and tried to find a TV while at the hospital. And turns out there was one in the waiting room. And as soon as I turned it on, it was the start of the second half. It was 2-0. And I thought about turning it off right then because I didn't want to see it. But then we looked so good that I didn't understand how we could have been down 2-0.
Yeah.
And then I've watched the highlights and it just all fell into place. It just all made so much more sense.
Good old Arsenal.
Yeah. But no, that was it.
I do think Arsenal should be put in the dictionary as a verb. just to cock up, kind of, just without any rhyme or reason.
This would benefit the English language very much.
Yeah. They've just got a remarkable ability to do so. Right, let's get into the game then. So obviously it was 3-1. Arsenal now sit fifth in the Premier League. They're still above Spurs because Spurs are rubbish. And they... Yes. Did they draw at the weekend?
They drew. They have now not won in, I think, 4 straight matches.
Yeah, starting with the North London derby as well.
Exactly. We broke them. We really did. And it looks like we broke Burnley too. So I guess we have a knack for breaking teams.
Yeah, and ourselves.
Very true. We break ourselves better than we break other teams.
So we're still above Spurs. 3 points clear of Spurs. 7 points behind United now. And 15 points behind City. Is the title race over, 15 points behind?
You know that I'm obligated to say that it's not over. I'm sorry. Every time I watch Manchester City, I just think it's going to catch up to them at some point. They're not blowing teams out all the time. West Ham even made them look beatable.
Yeah, no. I mean, I don't think it's over either. I think catching one team that is 15 points clear is a lot easier than catching 4 teams that are all 8 points clear, because you just need that one team to capitulate over 2 or 3 weeks. They lose 3 games in 5, something like that, drop 9 or 10 points, and suddenly you're right back in it. If Arsenal were 10 points behind everybody, and you know, Spurs, United, Chelsea were all 10 points clear, then I think you'd probably be better saying that the title race is over, because you're not relying on one team to suffer. You're relying on 4 or 5.
Yeah.
But in this scenario, you can't say the title race is over. Do I expect Arsenal to win the title? Absolutely not. But that doesn't mean it's over. I know Emmanuel Petit came out today and said that he thinks Arsenal, if they play like they did on Saturday, can still win the title if a few things break right. And I think that's probably true, just about. Yeah. Having said that, the top four is still well and truly open. Arsenal are fifth, but they're a point behind Liverpool, 4 points behind Chelsea, and obviously 7 behind United, who didn't really play very well on Saturday. So there's a long, long, long way to go, and it will be interesting to see what happens. Just a little nugget: Arsenal have another 6 games before the turn of the year in the Premier League. That is 6 games. 5 of them are against teams currently in the bottom half, the highest of them being Southampton, which is this Saturday, who are currently in 11th. And the sixth game is against Liverpool on, I think it's the 22nd of December, just before Christmas. That was going to, stupidly, was going to be played on Christmas Eve at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which is just one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. Good old Sky Sports trying to get their way over the, trying to put the British public over a barrel. Absolutely terrible. So it's going to play Friday night. So there is a period now where Arsenal can put together a few decent performances against lesser teams and maybe begin to pile on the pressure a little bit on the top four race. Do you think that's possible in a month that Arsenal tend to not do too badly in December? They don't do too badly in the festive period.
Yeah, I shouldn't say I worry, but they do have, I mean, it's Crystal Palace, it's West Brom, West Ham, and Southampton, all very beatable teams, but they're all away, and I still haven't seen Arsenal do enough away, except at Burnley. That was their best away performance, but even that, it wasn't like they completely dominated. I mean, they held on, and then they won at the last second. So it's going to be, I think Southampton's going to be the pace setter, because they're, again, another bogey team. We always talk about how many bogey teams Arsenal has, but Southampton's one of them.
Every team is a bogey team.
I just, you know, it sounds stupid, but I'm worried about Charlie Austin, because every time they start him, he scores and scores.
He scores goals.
Incredible. We joked about him last time, but damn, he's still doing it. Whenever they play him, he scores. And at home, I do think that by the end of December, I think we'll be able to get a good read on if Arsenal will be able to make a title run, just based on these results. And I guess we should be finding out what's happening with Alexis and Ozil also. So December, January, it's big time for Arsenal.
Yeah, no, that is right. And it's a big time every year, isn't it? The festive period is when it's when runs are made. I know Chelsea were phenomenal during December and January last year. It was when they really separated themselves from the rest of the pack. Right, let's delve into Saturday's game then. I guess the first thing to talk about, probably the most important thing to talk about, was the defensive errors, especially the first two. What did you make of Lauren Koscielny and Shkodran Mustafi collectively trying to give United an early advantage?
It's just, you know, first of all, let me just say, I said before the match that Shkodran Mustafi changed everything, and he was the reason why we would not fall under pressure against United. And I couldn't have been more wrong. Not only did he screw up massively, but then he got hurt and then left, and left us with Manuel and Koscielny at the back, which, to their credit, they did good. They didn't face much after those first two goals. But, I mean, it struck me as they looked like they were so caught off guard. Like, they expected Mourinho to do his typical parking the bus, which I guess it makes sense why you'd think that, but their inability to communicate and regroup was really shocking for me. And I'm not sure who that falls on, if that falls on Koscielny for being the captain or Mustafi for being the better communicator. I mean, you got to blame
Wenger even.
I was going to say, you got to blame Wenger a little bit, but once you get out onto that field, it's all about the players adapting, and somebody had to recognize this isn't what we planned for. We need to start acclimating to the match ahead of us, and they didn't do that in time. And once you spot a team like United a two goal lead, good luck.
Yeah, even with how well Arsenal played, it kind of felt like it was game over after the 11th minute.
Yeah,
that's very much true. I think I wrote a piece after looking at it when individual errors become systematic errors, because this isn't new where Arsenal have made, especially defensively, where Arsenal have made individual mistakes, whether it be in possession or out of possession, and it's cost them with the other team scoring a goal, taking an early lead, or say Arsenal have got a lead and then they throw it away with a poor pass or a defensive mistake or something. And that there is, and I don't necessarily think Wenger's to blame, but I think there is a culture problem in this Arsenal squad that is allowing so many individual mistakes, and whether that lies on Koscielny, like you said, as the captain, even Mertesacker, or whether that lies on people like Mustafi, Aaron Ramsey, the more senior players in the squad, I don't know. But there is definitely a deeper rooted issue, I think, in this Arsenal squad that cost them the mental sharpness early in games to just stay in it. Even at 1-0 down, this game isn't over. You know, I saw a few people on Twitter saying, okay, Arsenal 1-0 down, but there's a long, long way to go. And suddenly you're 2-0 down, and that second goal changes the game, and also the third goal as well, which we'll get on to. Let's look at the first goal. Some people were trying to blame Sead Kolasinac for not coming to the ball rather than expecting it to move a bit wider. I don't necessarily ascribe to that viewpoint. I think it's on Koscielny. Would you put any blame on Kolasinac at all?
No, it's hard to blame. Like you said, I mean, it was a panicky situation. Koscielny played a bad ball. The fact that the guy that he intended it for, I mean, sure, maybe Kolasinac could have done it a bit more, but I don't think you can pin the blame on him. I do think, though, that Cech could have done more with that. I mean, I know, you know, Valencia tucked it between his legs, but I don't know. I mean, it wasn't like it was a clear, straight-on goal opportunity. I feel like they could have done more, Cech especially, to make up for the mistakes.
Would David De Gea have saved it?
Yeah, obviously. He saved everything.
Yeah, stretch Armstrong, your goal happens every time against Arsenal. It's ridiculous. I think, yeah, and I think Nacho Monreal didn't do very well for the goal as well. Because when Valencia gets the ball, he plays it inside to Pogba, and four Arsenal defenders all run to the ball, and then that creates the space in the kind of inside right channel that Pogba then gives it back to Valencia. And Monreal doesn't need to close down Pogba there, and I think he went into panic mode and just thought ball and just scampered straight after the ball, and he wasn't thinking clearly, he wasn't defending correctly. I think he himself will be able to watch that back and say, no, I shouldn't have done that, I should have stayed with Valencia. And I just think it was a mental mistake of Arsenal lost the ball, they were panicking in their defensive work, and they just thought, let's just crowd the ball as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I and then it kind of goes back to what you say about when do individual mistakes become systematic mistakes, because it's like, I get why Koscielny would panic there, but then it seems like once panic sets in, it just spreads so quickly.
Yeah,
and nobody was able to make up for it. And Monreal, like you said, who's usually such a cool customer, he panicked, everybody panicked, and it was just, I don't know, at some point you got to start asking, where does this stem from, because it happens so often.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the second goal, it was Skodran Mustafi was messing about with the ball, and I felt a little bit sorry for him, because Kolasinac was quite advanced that down the left hand side, which is fine. He's done nothing wrong there. And then Nacho Monreal doesn't pull wide and deep to give Mustafi an easy option. Now that doesn't excuse Mustafi's idiocy to hang on to the ball for that long and allow Lingard to nick in, but it is an issue, and it is difficult when you're on the ball and you're the deepest defender and you're under pressure and you don't have an easy pass. It doesn't excuse him, but there was a problem there, and I don't think it's fair to solely pin it on Mustafi. The other mistake he made, and this is me being cynical, really, he as soon as he gives the ball away, or as soon as he loses the ball and it goes back to Lukaku, he charges at Lukaku. Again, a little bit like Monreal, in panic, he just thinks ball and just drives straight at the ball. Lukaku swerves around him, and if I'm putting myself in Mustafi's shoes, I'm taking Lukaku out. I'm taking the foul and even taking a yellow card after 10 minutes. You're the deepest defender, you've just lost the ball, they've got Martial and Lingard free, and Lukaku's just taken you out of the game. You have to take him out at that point, and that's a bit cynical. It technically it's cheating, but every footballer does it. And I think at that point, you've just got to take one for the team, and take the yellow card.
I think along those lines that the bigger mistake was how he reacted to his mistake.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it, knowing you're the deepest defender, that you just gave the ball away, the best thing you can do if you can't stop him is to just stay in front of him, because then at the very least you slow him down, you give your teammates a chance to catch up and help you out, and he just threw himself up front, and it just completely blew any chance we had of making up for that mistake, which, I mean, yeah, the only thing you can do to make a mistake worse is to make an even worse mistake after that, and Mustafi took care of that, so, and then he got hurt too. So it was
Just, and I've not, have you heard anything about time of absence?
No,
yet?
I don't. It was weird because after the match, Wenger said, "I don't know what's wrong with them," and people kind of freaked out. But and I wrote about this after the match. I don't think it's anything we should panic about. I mean, it was right after the match. I don't know how Wenger would have heard anything yet because he had just finished the match and then went to the press conference. I mean, it reminded me of when Ozil left before the Burnley match. He said something similar where he said, "I haven't even seen him," like, and I kind of took that as a, "Well, why haven't you?" But at the same time, it's like, when would he have? So I don't think it's some giant conspiracy. I don't think Mustafi was, as people were saying on Twitter, was too far into his feelings to keep playing. I think he legitimately had an injury.
Yeah, I think he did as well.
Yeah, and that said, if he is back in training tomorrow, fantastic. That doesn't mean that he blew it or won it out of the game. It just means that maybe he picked up something. He wasn't sure what it was. They took him off. They needed more attack anyway after that. So it
Yeah, I mean, Lacazette was done for the year 2 days ago. then he's back.
Amazing how that works.
Yeah, rising from the dead. scuppered my predicted starting 11 as well. The only one I got wrong was Lacazette. But there we go.
You can be forgiven for that one too.
Yeah.
When Arsene Wenger says something, you tend to listen to it. And he said he would not play, and he played.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite excited when I did see him on the
team sheet,
nonetheless.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little nugget on Mustafi. He completed only 50% of his passes on the 11 minutes that he was on the pitch, which in any position is bad. As a centre-half, it's truly catastrophic. And obviously, it's only 11 minutes, so the sample size is small. But I think just as a little kind of signpost that highlights the difficulties that Arsenal were having in just keeping hold of the ball deep into their own half and not allowing United really easy chances to open up at goal. Let's move to slightly more positive notes, I guess. Do you think I'll just give you a few stats. Arsenal had 33 shots on goal, 15 were on target. David Haye made 14 saves, which is the equal most since the stat was has begun to be charted. Lacazette alone had 7 shots, 4 were on target, and the other 3 were blocked. So I don't know about the 3 block shots, but it's possible that of his 7 shots, all were heading at least towards the goal. So was this poor finishing by Arsenal, or just good goalkeeping and last-ditch defending by United, or was it a bit of both?
Well, it's always a bit of both, but from what I've seen, and again, I didn't see the first half, but I did try to catch up with all the highlights that I could. I don't think it was poor finishing. The only one that I really thought was kind of poor wasn't even Lacazette. It was when Lacazette was saved by De Gea, and then Alexis kicked it straight into De Gea's foot. But to his credit, he didn't have much room to work with. And it looked like he did try to get some loft on the ball, but he was just too close to De Gea to make it work. Still, you should definitely score there. I mean, I don't think you can fault Lacazette's finishing, because we've seen how good of a finisher he is. And it's not like these shots were straight at De Gea. I mean, again, he was Stretch Armstrong in goal. He was everywhere. And again, these weren't like... These weren't soft efforts. They were really good shots. Most of them, at least, the ones that I saw were good shots.
Yeah, no, they were.
That against most keepers would go in. Against Petr Cech would probably go in. But not for De Gea.
No. I think there were a couple of moments where Lacazette's... The kind of decision in how he wanted to shoot was a little bit odd. There was one where Cross came in from the left-hand side and he kind of prodded at it with his right foot, rather than sweeping across with his left, which would have been much more advantageous in terms of the precision and the power that he could have got on his effort. And then the one where he kind of rounded De Gea and Gea was on the floor, and then he took kind of 10 million touches to shoot, allowing the United defenders to get back and block. And really should have laid it off. I think it was Ramsey who was just behind him, and all he needs to do is play a 2-yard pass and Ramsey smashes it in. So I think while his finishing in and of itself was okay, I think his decision making at times was a little bit frustrating.
But do you think that comes down sort of to knowing how well De Gea has been and feeling like he had to be perfect?
Yeah, and they were talking on BT Sport afterwards, and Rio Ferdinand was asking Frank Lampard about shooting against De Gea, and he said, if you've seen that performance against Arsenal today and you're playing against him next week, will you kind of change the way that you play against De Gea? And Lampard said, yeah, absolutely. I won't have as many pot shots from distance because I know I'm not going to beat him. And he also said, I'll try and take an extra touch to set myself before shooting to make sure I'm got good balance, to make sure I can get as much power on the shot as possible. And perhaps that did enter Arsenal's mind a little bit, that they just kind of, I know this shot has to be perfectly positioned to even have a chance of going in. And that kind of mental doubt, that mental barrier, can be quite difficult to overcome. I think on Lacazette, I actually thought Lacazette was excellent. I thought his movement was really, really sharp. His touch was really good. His hold-up play was good. So I think while he only scored one goal, probably should have scored more, I think for the most part he was a definite plus. I mean, you don't create 33 shots without your striker playing well at some point in the game.
And he played 90 minutes.
And he played the 90 minutes. And he was going to be taken off, wasn't he? He was going to be taken off for Giroud. And then United scored the third goal to go 3-1 up. And then at that point... Paul Pogba got sent off. Paul Pogba got sent off and went down to 10 men. So then Wenger said, right, we're going to throw everything at this. Left Lacazette on. He brought Giroud on for... I can't remember who it was.
I think he took off... Did he take off Xhaka at some point?
He took off Xhaka beforehand for Welbeck and played Ramsey on his own in midfield. He might have taken off Kolasinac or something.
I'm checking now. He took off... Yeah, he took off Kolasinac.
He had about, you know, 10,000 strikers on the pitch. He basically just had everybody on the pitch, and still Jack Wilshere couldn't make an appearance. We'll move on slightly to the slickness of Arsenal's passing. I thought this was probably the best aspect of their performance. Ramsey and Ozil especially were brilliant. They combined for 21.2% possession. Over a fifth of the game was in control by either Ramsey or Ozil. Ozil made 65 final third passes, which is the most of any player in the Premier League this season. Arsenal as a team made 365 final third passes. That's 143 more than United made in any third. Arsenal had 75% possession. They had 655 passes in total, and United had just 86 in the final third. So this really was a death by 1,000 passes by Arsenal. But actually, it worked. They really carved open United time and time again. As we've discussed, they just didn't blooming score. But they did create many, many chances. I think Ramsey and Ozil especially should be highlighted for praise. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I couldn't be happier with Ozil. I mean, I always talk about how critical I am of him, and all I kept saying was, I just want to see him put three good games in a row. He did that. He did it against Tottenham. He did it against Huddersfield. He did it against United. Those are not all easy teams. And, I mean, I think the thing that impressed me most about Ozil, kind of getting off topic a bit, but was how he was so fired up.
Yeah, he was.
He was slamming the ball and yelling at people, and I was like, "This, I'm actually kind of scared over here. Like, yeah. This is a mean guy. I've never seen this.
Who is this guy?
Exactly.
What's he done with Mesut Ozil?
That was great, and I just, man, again, it's that question of why can't he always be like that? damn. But yeah, no, they were both fantastic. I'm about to make the point in an article that Aaron Ramsey is the best all-purpose midfielder in the Premier League because, I mean, yeah.
Good luck. It's,
yeah, thank you. he's when you stack him up against other players like him, the numbers just back him up immensely. And this is in an attack that is supposed to be dominated by Ozil, Alexis, Lacazette. He's been arguably the best of those three, and he's not even one of those three. So I mean, yeah, both of them, 21.2% of the possession between just two players, that's crazy.
Yeah, but I think if you throw Alexis in there, I think Alexis was close to about 8% as well, so
like
nearly a third of the game was Ramsey, Ozil, and Alexis. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, that's and it's not like United's an easy team to do this against. Even when if they're sitting back, they have the personnel out there that this shouldn't happen, but we made it happen.
No, I mean 75% possession against any team,
yeah,
irrespective of their quality, is you know that you've been in the ascendancy for large sections of the match. So against United, it shows Arsenal's dominance. Obviously, possession stats don't mean everything, but. They do provide a snapshot of Arsenal's control, certainly of the midfield areas. Let's move on slightly. I want to come at this slightly different angle. Let's talk about expected goals, the new craze of football statisticians. Per Opta, Arsenal had an expected goals of 5.01. United had an expected goals of 1.02. For those that don't know what expected goals are, basically they are a stat that details how likely it is a team will score from a certain position. So it is an equation that takes in factors things like how long the player has been controlling the ball for, the angle of the shot, the position of the shot, whether it's a headed shot or whether it's a shot with a foot, whether it's from a cross or from a through ball, whether they've been dribbling with the ball beforehand or whether it's been a first-time shot, takes in all these different factors. You plug all the numbers in, and it shoots out a expected probability of that shot being a goal. You then add up all those numbers and then say, well, this team, we would expect to have scored X amount of goals. And on Saturday for Arsenal, it was 5.01, which is absolutely huge. I think I'm right in saying it's the second highest of the Premier League season, behind, I think it was Manchester City at Palace, had an expected goals of like 6 point something stupid, when City were really purring. So you know, this, whatever you think of expected goals, actually let's start there, Josh. What do you think of expected goals? Do you think they're good? Do you think they're terrible?
I think it's fun. I think the one thing they can't include in their equation, though, is this new verb that we're going to get into the dictionary of when somebody's going to Arsenal something.
Yeah. And David De Gea in as well. That could be in there as well.
There we go. We need to talk to the folks at Opta about how they can make these crucial factors out of their expected goals. But no, I mean, all stats, you could say, are flimsy because they're based off what's happened, and anything could happen. So
yeah, absolutely.
Along those lines, I think it's a perfectly fun stat to look at. I don't know what giant conclusions you can draw out of it. But yeah, I mean, the fact that we managed to lose a game where our expected goals was the second highest of the entire Premier League season just goes to show you how hard we can Arsenal.
Yeah. I think this game will be next to the word Arsenal in the Oxford Dictionary. Just see December 2nd, 5:30 PM. yeah, I mean, I studied physics as a degree, so I understand things like modelling, real life things. That's basically what physics is. It provides a model for something that happens. to try and best describe something mathematically, and that's basically all that expected goals is. Is they've said, well, this is the game that happened. How can we best model the flow and the rhythm and the pattern of the game with numbers? And so obviously it's far from perfect, and I would always trust somebody's eye, or somebody I trust anyway, I would always trust their eye over what an expected goal equation would ever give me. But they do provide, I think, a nice little kind of overview of the general kind of pattern of play. They at least offer us a quick and easy glance at perhaps who was the more dominant team. And when you do have such a disparity between the two figures, I mean, Arsenal are nearly triple United's expected goals, then I think that kind of proves the dominance of their performance.
Yeah, and if, I mean, if you look at that expected goals of 5 to whatever, 1.82,
yeah.
Yeah, if you erase the scoreboard or the scoreline and then just put up the stats and you watch the game without the goals, you would say if this game ended 5-2, yeah, that would make a lot of sense. So that, I think that lends a bit of credibility to expected goals, and maybe this will be a great way to show just how far off Arsenal often become between what they do and what they are expected to do.
Yes, I think that's very true. I think just one final stat from me. Manu had 4 shots on target, and they scored 3 goals, and the 4th shot on target was a Jesse Lingard one-on-one that very, very nearly went in. So, you know, really, I guess that sums everything up, was United were incredibly clinical when they got the opportunity, and they should be praised for that. They were gifted those opportunities, but they took them very, very well. That was impressive of them. I think to score 3 goals or 4 shots on targets proves that, especially when you contrast that to the wastefulness of the Arsenal attacking and the brilliance of David De Gea at the other end. Have you got anything more to say or to ask on this game, Josh?
Yeah, I kind of just wanted to touch on Laurent Koscielny both in this game and in the span of the season, because we did our mid-season player rankings during the last international break, and it was a bit of a disparity for Laurent Koscielny. I had him 10th and you had him 3rd.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the same Koscielny that I'm used to seeing. There are mostly just because of the individual mistakes he's making. I don't think I've ever seen him make so many individual mistakes, and not all of them lead to something catastrophic, but I remember, I forget who it was against, but he had one aerial clearance that was so baffling, it went backwards and it set up a chance on goal. I mean, these are things I don't ever remember seeing Laurent Koscielny do. I mean, maybe 2 or 3 a year, but up to this point, I'd have to go back and look at it, but I swear I've counted at least 5, 6, 7 times where I've been like, what the hell is he doing? And again, chalk up another one for his mistake against United. I want to know what you think of Koscielny this year that maybe I don't think, because I'm losing faith in him, and I want my faith in him restored.
I definitely don't think he's having his best season. He is not playing as well as he has done in the past, that's for sure. He's not playing up to his best consistently. I think there are odd games here and there where he looks really good. I think against Spurs, I thought he was excellent. I think against Chelsea, he was very good as well. I guess in terms of the ranking, that was more an indictment on everybody else rather than an appraisal of Koscielny. I don't actually think Arsenal have had that many players who have played that well, especially when we did the rankings, which was before the Spurs win and the Burnley win in the international break. I think we had Nacho Monreal as the consensus number one, and I think that's probably fair enough. And then really, after that, I don't really think that many Arsenal players have played when we did the rankings, at their best. You could maybe throw Aaron Ramsey in there now, same with Mesut Ozil, same with even Alexis Sanchez or Lacazette if you wanted to. But I think Koscielny is definitely not at his best, I still think he's an excellent defender, having said that. He was terrible on Saturday. He was at direct fault for two goals. You know, getting rolled by Paul Pogba as he did for the third goal was
forgot about that. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean it was more than anything, it was naive. He's his French national teammate, so he knows how good a player Paul Pogba is. And I thought Paul Pogba was outstanding. I thought he was really very, very good. He knows how good he is. He knows how big he is. He knows how strong he is. So don't try and dive in and win the ball in the penalty area and risk being rolled like he did. It was naive defending, really. It wasn't, I guess, back to the same point, it wasn't intelligent. He looked a bit panicked. And obviously, it was a poor pass for the first goal, and he could have been sent off when he pulled down Lukaku. I don't think he should have been sent off, but I've certainly seen those kind of fouls being given for red cards in the past, and it wouldn't have been overly harsh had it been a red card. So, go ahead.
I was going to say, so along those lines, are you at all panicking about our defensive setup with having Mustafi and Koscielny and Monreal back there?
Not yet. I think one thing to point out is I think Koscielny most definitely shouldn't have played on Wednesday night against Huddersfield. Him and his Achilles, they did not have a good relationship at all. he looked old against United, I think, is probably the best way I could describe his performance. He just looked like he was making decisions that I think a fit and firing Koscielny would have been able to execute well, like the tackle on Pogba, for example. I think a fit and strong Koscielny would have been able to win the ball off Pogba and drive away from him. But I don't think his body is responding as he is used to, and I have a worrying feeling that is probably because of his Achilles at the moment. Am I worried moving forward? Not really. I think the Mustafi, Monreal, Koscielny trio is a really strong trio at the back. They've all got pace, which is essential if you're playing in a three at the back. They're all intelligent. They're all relatively good on the ball, and they're decent enough in the air. So I think these are individual errors that can be ironed out. Whether they will be ironed out or not is another question. But I'm not massively worried by their defensive mistakes from Saturday or Koscielny's defensive mistakes from earlier in the season. I just think it needs careful management, especially as the fixtures begin to pile up. You have players in Rob Holding and Callum Chambers and Per Mertesacker who are more than capable backups to come in for a game or two here and there. And I especially against the lesser sides, I wouldn't be against Wenger using them in any way to provide rest, particularly for Koscielny. Are you concerned about the three? I mean, these were the first goals that they've conceded as a three.
No, yeah, I completely agree with you. I'm not concerned about them. I think that, you know, as a single example, it was awful. But like you said, they've been fantastic as a three. That said, I would like to. I agree again that against Huddersfield, I don't think we should have sent Koscielny out there. You know, I guess the only concern that I have is that I really want to see Callum Chambers or Rob Holding get out there. And I hope over this busy December period that we won't expect this back three to do every single game whenever they're every 3 days, because that's asking a lot. And I just wish we could have experimented more with him up until now, because I'd hate to see one of them thrown in here when we really need a win or defensive solidity and for them to struggle, because they haven't been used as much, especially. You know, I think the world of Callum Chambers. I think he's a fantastic defender, and I don't think he's getting enough of a chance. Wherever I don't know what else he would need to prove to get out there more. But you know, this is the Arsene Wenger way. He's not going to take risks, and that's just something we got to live with.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that, and I do think that we're coming to the time where a long term replacement for Koscielny is becoming a more and more important priority in terms of the recruitment of this club. That player could be Callum Chambers or Rob Holding. I think talent-wise, they both have that ability. Whether they will get the opportunity to prove it or not is very much a different question. But I think for the rest of the season, Koscielny will be fine. But I think from next season onwards, a bit like Per Mertesacker, it's probably time to begin easing him out of the lineup and bringing through a younger central defender to replace him. It's sad to see because he's one of my favourite Arsenal players in this current squad. I really like him, and he's been important to the success that Arsenal have had in recent years. I think it's undeniable that he's one of the best players in this team currently, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you'd like to discuss on the United game before we look forward to Thursday night's wonderful?
Can we talk about how Xhaka and Bellerin both completely screwed the pooch on that third goal, and they were both left as if they didn't even know Jesse Lingard was there. They both just did their own thing, and there's Jesse hanging out in the box. He didn't.
Yeah, Xhaka was not good for that
goal. He's just not a defender, and I think the sooner we can divorce ourselves from this belief that he can be a defensive midfielder, the sooner we can all appreciate him. He can get back to being his best. But damn,
it feels like Mikel Arteta as a defensive midfielder again, doesn't it?
Yes, which is a feeling I'd never like to revisit in my
life.
Oh
gosh, Mikel Arteta as a defensive midfielder. Every
time I see him on the Manchester City bench or coming out of the tunnel, I get shivers. I'm like, oh, it's him again. Oh. He's a great guy. I think he was a good leader, but he was so misused. It wasn't even funny.
Oh, and some people thought he was good. That was the worst thing. Like people on Twitter and stuff would be saying, oh, Mikel Arteta's a brilliant defensive midfielder. He's terrible.
No, there's no world where he would be a good defensive midfielder. I know. Not at all.
He couldn't run. He couldn't tackle. I think Xhaka especially is, and it wasn't for a lack of effort or lack of ability.
Yeah,
it was just a lack of thought. You know, he worked his way back into the box. He'd recovered his position well. He was covering for Koscielny, who'd gone out to meet Paul Pogba, and all he needed to do is take one glance over his shoulder, and he actually. About 2 seconds before Pogba kind of plays the ball in, he has a little glance over his shoulder and he sees Jesse
Lingard.
I think
he thought
there.
Bellerin was going to get him.
Yeah, it's just... I don't know. It just seems common sense to me that you see a guy... And Arsenal are in panic mode there. You know, United are very close to their goal and they're not in a safe shape whatsoever. So at that point, you are in, you know, kind of... code red type situation. Xhaka's got to see Lingard behind him and just say, right, he's the threat. I'm just going to stand next to him and mark him.
I do also want to add that in the spirit of our word of the day, that the goal that we did score, Manchester United totally arsenaled that defense. They all stood there and held their hand up. And I was like, this is what it feels like when we do that.
I remember watching it live, and Aaron Ramsey's run came from a long way away.
Deep, yeah.
It was quite obvious what was about to happen. I was like, whoa, I mean, Sanchez is going to clip it over the top. Come on, guys.
That was beautiful, though. And, you know, we talked about this
last
time.
It was a lovely goal.
Yeah, we talked about this link-up that different players have, how as Pilicueta has found Morata for 5 goals. Well, now Ramsey has found Lacazette for 3 goals, and they're coming on really quick. And I wrote about this after the match. I don't think there's a partnership we'd rather have seeing develop, not knowing where Alexis and Ozil are going,
to see our
best midfielder that is hopefully staying, combining with our new forward. It's great to see. You know, that run, it was like a simultaneous run where they were both on the same wavelength. They both understood the situation they were in, and they couldn't have done it any better.
Do you think his touch was for Lacazette, or do you think his touch was for him?
I watched it a few times, And maybe I'm biased, but there was never a part of me where I thought it wasn't for Lacazette. Because how do you see a teammate there that you know is a good finisher, even being Aaron Ramsey, and not want to give the ball right to him as easy
as you
can?
I don't think he knew he was there. Because as he brings the ball down, and he brings it down on his foot, and he you kind of see his head swivel to his left, almost as if, oh no, the ball didn't go where I wanted it to go. Where's it gone? And then he sees it at Lacazette's feet. I was like, oh, that's a good pass. I'll take that one. I don't think you should be criticised for it, because really the quality of the move was in the run, and the timing of the run. That was really where Ramsey kind of made his mark on that goal, rather than the touch and the pass was. I still think he could have recovered and scored had Lacazette not been there. So I don't really think it's something to criticise him for. More just a point of question that people have had different answers on. I do think Ramsey's form is possibly the most promising thing to come out of Saturday's win. Especially like you said, we don't know where Ozil and Sanchez are going to be, even by the end of January, never mind by the end of the year. So Ramsey, am I right in saying his contract runs out in 2019 as well?
2019, yeah. And you know, this always bothers me. They bring it up and they say, "Oh, they're entering contract negotiations." Well, that was 6 months ago. Yeah. Where's it gone? Why haven't we heard from him? Supposedly, we got this worried. New guy in. Yeah, we get this new guy in who's supposed to.
The contract
be here
guru.
Specifically, yeah, exactly. And everybody that's been linked to a new contract leaves. And, you know, Oxlade-Chamberlain, they were like, oh, here comes a new contract. A few months later, he's gone. Ozil was supposed to be negotiating his contract. That was like 10 months ago, and he said he's heard nothing since. Like, I don't know. It's weird stuff. And they were supposed to be talking to Welbeck and Ramsey was the last thing I heard, but that was back in, like, August, and there's been nothing since.
Yeah, so it looks at the moment that in the summer we're going to be exactly where we were last summer, just with new people and players who aren't quite as good, and then what will happen is 4 years later we'll be in exactly the same situation, but with players who aren't quite as good. Gradually the squad will get worse, depleted by soon-to-be-expiring contracts.
See, and I'm an FC Schalke fan, and they have this problem with letting guys go for free, and as soon as that starts happening to them, it's happening to Arsenal now. I can't get away from it.
Yeah, well, Arsenal may be the beneficiaries of that. We never know.
That's true. Can't complain too much.
Let's hope so. Right, let's take a short interlude before we drive ourselves mad, and we will discuss Thursday night's hosting of Bate Borisov in what is probably the most meaningless game of the season, so we won't spend very long on it whatsoever. But we'll see you on the other side. We'll look forward to Bate Borisov and Southampton as well. See you in a moment. Hello and welcome back. I hope you enjoyed our somewhat depressing deep dive into the 3-1 loss to United on Saturday. I'm back here with Josh again, and we are going to very briefly talk about Thursday night's game at the Emirates against Bate Borisov. I'll tell you why it's brief, because Arsenal have already qualified for the knockout stages of the Europa League. They've already qualified in first, so there is literally no point in playing this game. At least from an Arsenal perspective. So I guess very, very quickly, Josh, how do you think Wenger will set up?
I hope that he takes all of his players that were involved against United, doesn't put them anywhere near that game. Just say, do not come within 100 yards of the Emirates. Just stay away and just throw a bunch of kids out there. Because like you said, it doesn't matter. Let them have some fun. Mm. It'll be great. And that's it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'd love him to throw all the kids in there. What players would you like to see? Who assuming he does go with the kids, who are you most looking forward to getting to watch? And in what position as well?
Yeah, that's a crucial thing.
You know, obviously he's going to play Trubarak Prom at centre-half.
Yeah, I would love to see Reese Nelson in an attacking role, but I've been saying that since the dawn of time, and it has yet to happen. So I'm not going to count on that. I do want to see Eddie Nketiah start, because I just freaking love this kid. He's just scores all the time, and the more chances he gets, the more he's going to score. So I want to see him out there. I want to see Marcus McGwain again, because I'm still, you know, everything that I've seen looks like he's the type of midfielder that we really need, and I'm hoping that maybe he can spare us the trouble of having to hope that we get a midfielder by just being good enough himself. And then Ainsley Maitland-Niles, just because he's been, of all the players that we've used, all the kids, he's been remarkably consistent. He's been very good, despite being out of position. And it's always nice to see a kid that you can legitimately say to yourself, he's ready for the first team. He's ready for some sort of involvement. And I really do feel that way about Maitland-Niles.
For me, it's wanting to see Ainsley Maitland-Niles and Reece Nelson in their proper positions.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Reece Nelson as a traditional right winger, just one on one with a fullback and just absolutely ragging him silly. And then I'd love to see Ainsley Maitland-Niles in the centre midfield. I feel he has the ability to play that kind of scampering defensive midfielder role quite well. He's got the athleticism, he's got the speed, he's got the pace. And I think he's a very intelligent player as well. And he's done well at left wing back, but it clearly is not his most natural position. So we'll have to see where he plays and if he plays on Thursday. But obviously my predicted starting 11 will be a guessing starting 11. I've not got a Scooby-Doo what Wenger's going to do. I guess rather than focus on the game, let's focus on the Europa League more generally before moving on to the Southampton fixture. Once Arsenal get to the knockout stages, how seriously should the Europa League be taken? Do you think this is the time where Wenger should begin to play the kind of the players that have been playing in the Premier League, or would you still like him to see a weakened team in the Europa League?
That's tough to say, just because obviously if we don't feel like we can get top four, I'd want to see us go all in on the Europa League, but it's still in that stage where we should feel like we should get top four. So it's hard to discern the difference. I do think, I was going to say I'd like to see that weakened team that has the likes of Giroud and Wilshere, but then that team struggled at times in the group stages, and I would hate to see that team be the reason we get knocked out in like the round of 32, because that would not go over well. I think, though, at least for the initial rounds, you got to stick with what you've done up until this point.
Yeah.
Just because the top four is looking like a very real possibility, and I think we should be concentrating our players on that. I do wish we just had that one or two extra really quality player that we could plug in to the Europa League, but we don't. We don't have the depth. We're going to still have to see Elneny and Coquelin, which I just wish we didn't. I think you go in with kind of that half-youth, half-veteran team.
Yeah, and I think it probably partly depends on the draw, doesn't it? If Arsenal, say if Borussia Dortmund end up in the Europa League, which is looking likely, and they get drawn against Borussia Dortmund in the first round, then I think maybe you adapt and you play a slightly stronger team. If you get a lesser side that you feel you can beat without having to play, you know, the likes of Alexis and Meza and other players like that, then you don't, and you play a weakened team. But I do think it's worth pursuing assuming Arsenal get into the later stages, just because it offers qualification to the Champions League, which, you know, that there are six very good teams in the Premier League at the moment, and Arsenal are far from guaranteed of finishing in that top four. So, really, if the Europa League offers the chance to get into the Champions League, then that may be the best avenue to pursue. Let's leave Batibas off there.
Yes.
Because I'm already bored, and we've only been talking about it for 5 minutes. Let's move on to Southampton. Again, we won't spend too long on it. We'll focus more on the review next week. But this is a another tricky away tie. Southampton currently in 11th position. They're decent defensively. They've got a absolute genius striker in Charlie Austin, who's scoring thousands of goals. Do you think? Let's start with this question. Do you think Wenger will make any changes? Obviously, assuming Mustafi is injured, he'll have to make a change there. But do you think there'll be any other changes that he wants to make after the loss to United, or do you think he'll continue in a similar vein to what he has been doing all year?
I can't see anything changing. I mean, again, this goes back to the Europa League thing, where I don't think we have enough quality players to justify changing. I mean, we've been advocating for Wilshere to come in for quite some time, but that's not going to happen. Not whenever he'd have to replace Ramsey or Ozil or Alexis. That's just not going to happen. And it shouldn't happen, really. They've been so good. And, you know, again, that United game, yeah, we lost, but damn, we played so well that you don't want to break up that team, because you know they're going to be, they all got to be pissed off. I mean, Ozil said after the match, he's still upset about the game. I think it was the next day he said that, and I don't ever recall Ozil being that adamant in a tweet either, so it just goes back to my who is this Mesut Ozil kind of thing. But no, I think you leave everything the same. I think you have to. If you don't, you're doing something wrong, because this is a very capable team. And yeah, if we put that same starting 11 out there, I don't see what Southampton can do to stop it. Then again, I said the same about United. Then, of course, they really didn't stop it. It was definitely stopped all of it.
Yeah, I think I agree. One thing perhaps maybe to keep an eye on, especially with the Mustafi injury, is whether Wenger goes to a four at the back. I know he did, you know, as soon as Mustafi was injured, he brought Alex Iwobi on, so he basically played four at the back for the majority of the United game. And I wonder if that will have changed his thinking at all. I don't think it will, but there is a chance. It feels, the three at the back system to me feels like Wenger's happy to go along with it as long as it works. But as soon as something goes wrong, if Arsenal struggle for 2 or 3 weeks, then I think he'll revert back to his norm pretty quickly in that 4-2-3-1 formation that he loves. I don't think that will happen this week, but again, it's something to keep an eye on, especially given Arsenal's success in that shape against United. Who of Southampton worries you? Obviously, Charlie Austin.
Charlie Austin.
Charlie Austin is the first name to leap off. Who worries you? It could be Austin. It could be somebody else.
Yeah, Charlie Austin he's causing me to already lose sleep at night, because I just picture him scoring so many goals, thousands, millions, like you said. I think Sofian Boufal kind of worries me, just because he's the kind of guy that can make your defense look silly if he's on his game. And there have been plenty of times where he's not been. I think majority of the time he hasn't been on his game, but he is capable of that.
Yeah. So yeah. He kind of can score goals. He can score goals from absolutely nothing.
Yeah, and that's something that worries me after seeing our defense so prone to mistakes. He's the kind of guy that can take advantage of that, whether he will or not, we don't know. But other than that, I mean, I think you got to worry about Van Dijk. He hasn't been as good as he traditionally is, but he's still one of the better defenders in the Premier League. And Fraser Forster, he was the original keeper that made me start comparing every keeper that plays against Arsenal to Stretch Armstrong. It was him. It was about, I think, 2 years ago. He made, I think, 11 saves on us, and it was it wasn't real life. It was like, this isn't really happening. It's Fraser Forster. He's a great keeper, but he shouldn't be able to do that kind of thing. So I worry that he might come back into his David De Gea boots. For
Stretch Armstrong. Playing against Arsenal once again.
Yeah,
there are a few guarantees in life. Arsenal screwing things up is one, and the fact that they play a Stretch Armstrong-esque goalkeeper is another one.
Yes.
I think I gave the fixture list earlier, where Arsenal play five of their next six fixtures are against bottom half teams. And I think this is a chance for them to quickly right the wrongs from from the United game. And there weren't many wrongs, really. It was more just wasteful finishing and individual errors at the back. But this is a chance where I think if Arsenal can get that early goal, a little bit like they did against Huddersfield, I do believe that they can go on and score two or three more and actually end up with quite a comfortable afternoon. One thing I would like to touch on before we close, do you think this is obviously the last game after the Europa League fixture until the knockout stages, which will recommence in kind of February time. So far this year, Arsenal haven't really been affected by the Europa League schedule, the Thursday-Sunday rhythm that has affected teams in the past. Do you think this is the kind of game away, middling but hard to beat Premier League team? Do you think this is the kind of game where Europa League effects or tiredness could perhaps play a part in Arsenal's performance?
I would hope not, just because the players that we expect to see out there in the Europa League aren't the players that would be playing a big part against Southampton.
Yep.
I mean, I think it just comes down to if we believe that Ozil, Alexis, Lacazette, Ramsey, who should be nowhere near the Emirates on Thursday, if they can break down the Southampton defense, and I you have to have confidence. I mean, I shouldn't tell you what you have to do or not. You cannot have confidence if you don't want to, but I have supreme confidence that they can break that down, and I don't think they're going to need a Giroud or a Wilshere if they do play on Thursday to help them do that.
Yeah, no, I think that's more than fair enough, really. Is there anything else you want to discuss about this Southampton game before we wrap up?
No, not really. I mean, I think, as always, it's important that we get out to that good start because, as you've said, they defend very well. They always have. It seems to be the one thing that they never lose, strangely enough. But yeah, I mean, I'm not terribly worried about it. Then again, I don't know when the last time is that I have been worried about an Arsenal match. So take that as you will.
Yeah, take that lack of worry with a pinch of salt, everyone. I'm probably a bit more worried. I mean, Southampton have caused Arsenal trouble. And they do have some decent players. I love James Ward-Prowse. I think he's a really tidy player. I love Davies in the middle as well. I think he's a really underrated, overlooked, solid midfielder. And because he isn't especially brilliant at anything, he kind of people kind of ignore him a bit. But he's just very reliable. I think he's a good player. And obviously Bufal, Charlie Austin, Redmond, any of those guys, depending on how they rotate their lineup, they can create and score goals in individual moments that Arsenal will find difficult. Let's take one last interlude, and we will come back and answer a couple of Twitter questions. Henry isn't here to present this week, so you'll have to make do with us two. We've just got a couple of questions from Twitter that we'll have a look through, and then we'll wrap up the show. So see you in a moment. Welcome back. Me and Josh we're still here, still plodding on. We've just got a few questions from Twitter, a few topics that we'd like to discuss just in the last five, 10 minutes of the show. The first one was about Gedin Zelalem, who a tweet from Chris Wheatley, who works for Goal.com, is an excellent follow on Twitter. I'd recommend going and following him. He posted a video of Gedin Zelalem running after his ACL surgery. A question came in asking, do you think Zelalem can play a part in the future of Arsenal? Or do you think really that his time has come and gone as a prospective talent?
You know, he's such a talented kid, and he's only 20 years old. He'll turn 21 in January. I don't think you can ever say his time has come and gone, especially when you see someone like Wilshere, who, you know, struggle with injuries so often, and yet he still plays such a big part on the team. Obviously, Zalalem still needs to make that big breakthrough like Wilshere did back then. But he's still got hope. I mean, especially since he plays the one position that I think we're always looking for a bit of help in the midfield. The problem is I don't see a place for him in the 3-4-2-1 or whatever that we use because he's a smaller guy. And obviously Cazorla is too, but Cazorla, I think Cazorla just was an anomaly with how well he fit into the defensive role whenever he's just not a defender. But I don't think Zalalem is that type. I mean, he's more of the Ozil type that can dwell over the ball, and he's very sure-footed. He can pick out the passes. So, you know, maybe there's hope for him to move into one of those front two roles. It's just, I mean, I hate to just use a generality, but it's all about staying healthy. Because there's going to be opportunities. There's always going to be opportunities. It's just a matter of him staying healthy at this point. But he can still definitely make an impact at Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, he's been rated as a talent for a real long, long time. I can remember when he was kind of 16, 17, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years ago, and people were saying, this guy's incredible. I remember one, I can't quite remember who it was. It might have been Liam Brady when he was manager of the academy. Said he can pass like Xavi and dribble like Iniesta.
High praise.
Which is high praise indeed. And he certainly is a talented lad. I love the fluidity and the elegance of his movement. He's a little bit sharper than Ozil, I think. He's a little bit quicker than him.
Yeah.
But he kind of slaloms his way through defenders with real grace. It's really nice to watch. And he's extremely intelligent as well in the positions that he takes up, the pockets of space that he kind of finds and exploits.
I got to talk to the scout that discovered him, Danny Carbassio, and I talked to him.
Oh, wow.
I think it was about a year ago, and this was when Zalalem was about to, I think it was just before one of his loan moves, and he's Arsenal's North American scout, and he had nothing but good things to say about Zalalem and how he's seen so many talents over North America, and you know, Zalalem was really the one. He was the one that he knew was something special. And you know, granted, it is North America, which is not exactly renowned as a hotbed, but still, I mean, you see him, like you said, whenever he's healthy and in form. I mean, even whenever he went to Rangers, it was a very physical league over there, and he handled it quite well.
He did.
He was very composed. I mean, I would always look after a match at the Rangers Twitter sphere, and they were always full of praise for him. I mean, there were a few games where they would say, get him out of here, he was terrible, but most of it was very positive, and I felt like that was really the last bit of convincing that I needed, because I was always worried about his size and if he could handle the physicality just after seeing how Ozil kind of struggled with it, but seeing him do so well with Rangers swayed me into belief.
Yeah, and that's always a... With young players, it's kind of a given that there's going to be fluctuations in form. They're not as consistent. They're not able to perform at the high level that is expected of them every week. So I think I can forgive him some inconsistencies at his age. The problem for me, obviously, health is a big one, as it is with any player. And I also struggle to see how many games he's going to get at Arsenal. I guess games of meaning. He'll probably play a few youth games, a lot of reserve games. He may get into the Europa League team, kind of that rotation. But I'm certainly concerned how many Premier League minutes he's ever going to get, if any. I'd be very surprised if he ever makes the Premier League squad, never mind the bench or the pitch. Other than going out on loan, and then you kind of get that, kind of perceptual kind of cycle of just going out on loan every single year, but never really, you know, and then coming back to the club, but never really establishing himself, and that would be my main concern for him.
Well, I mean, think about it this way: he's getting healthy right at the right time because.
Well, yes, that is true. That's
Arsene Wenger's got 1 year left, And, you know, when a new manager comes in, whoever that may be, probably going to take a stock of what he has and what he needs. And if Zalalem's there healthy, ready to prove himself, he might find himself in a pretty good position as a 21-year-old at a, or I guess he'd be 22 then, as a 22-year-old, you know, with a brand new manager and a brand new lease on life, because he's I can't imagine him being sold before then.
Because no,
I don't know why we would. So
that is true. He is definitely getting healthy at the right time, and obviously, I'd love to see him play regularly. I think he's an exciting player. He's one to keep an eye on, I think. Let's move on to another question we got, asking about Granit Xhaka. Does he need replacing? Josh, I assume you're going to say no, but I guess for you it's probably. Actually, the answer might be yes, in terms of the position that he plays needs replacing, but he should be playing in a different position. Would that be right?
It's tough to say. I don't want him replaced. You're right about that, because I really do believe in what he brings to the team. It's just so tough because this formation doesn't seem to have a good place to put him. You can't really put him in a forward role because he's not quick enough, and you can't put him in a back role because he can't defend well enough. So yeah, I mean, you pretty much answered it for me. I do think that he needs a different place on the team, but that would require a change in formation. But you know, honestly, lately, I think he's stepped up a lot recently. I think that comes a lot down to, Aaron Ramsey's ability to play more of a defensive role than perhaps he had before. And, you know, Tottenham was the time where that really turned around, because Ramsey stayed behind Xhaka most of the time and he led the team in tackles. He was fantastic on the defensive front. I think we're seeing that more and more, so that Xhaka is a bit more free. But then, man, you see him letting Lingard in behind him, and you just think, keep him as far away from needing to be in a defensive position as possible. But I mean, that's stuff that you can learn too. It's not like you can't learn to be a better defender. So it's just a long way of saying, no, I don't think he should be replaced. But if we do find a better way to use him, I would be very happy with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think defensive midfield needs replacing rather than Xhaka needs replacing necessarily. You could play... I'd love to see him play alongside an N'Golo Kante-type figure who can do his running for him. And then he can be kind of more of a distributor from deep, like a kind of Xabi Alonso type player. I think if we are ever going to see his best, I think that's the type of role that he has to play. Whether he will ever get to play that role or not is another question. I think as long as he plays defensive midfield, I will say he does need replacing. But that's probably not his fault necessarily. I think he's being misused, and I think at times Ramsey doesn't help him. Because his positioning is so, or can be so, undisciplined. He kind of just gets a bit too excited with attacking all the time, and then there's 20 yards between Xhaka and his nearest player, and of course he's going to get overrun in that situation. So I think recently, you're right, Ramsey has been a lot more intelligent and disciplined in his positioning, but if he does get overexcited again and pushes forward too much, I think Xhaka will be exposed at times. Let's move on to the final question, which looks at the prospect of Leon Goretzka of Schalke coming to Arsenal. I guess, firstly, would you want him to sign? Do you think it's likely that he signs? And where do you think he'd play?
I've always thought it was likely that he would sign, just because, you know, last summer he was linked to Bayern Munich, and he was very adamant that he was tired of hearing himself linked to Bayern Munich. And I think he was very clear that that's not where he wants to go. And for a player of his type, you're going to get your best in the Premier League, because he's built for the Premier League. He's kind of like, I always compare him to a more reliable Aaron Ramsey. And this, obviously, Ramsey's been a lot better this year, but we've seen him kind of fluctuate in form. Goretzka, it's crazy to think that he's only 22 years old because he plays with such maturity and with such just raw ability. And I think, assuming that Alexis and Mesut Ozil both leave, the resulting formation that I think we could make, and I've just been toying with this now, it's a brand new formation. It's a 3-6-1, which sounds horrible, but listen.
We're changing the game here. Yes. Changing the game.
But I mean, with the three at the back, the reason I say six, because you've got the two wing backs, but then I look at a four-man midfield, and I look Xhaka and then a defensive midfielder like a Kante, and then Goretzka and Ramsey up ahead of them, and I call that a 3-6-1 just because both Goretzka and Ramsey have such high engines and work ethics that they're not going to be just attacking presence, but they're never going to be lacking for that attacking presence. They're always going to be up there when they need to be, but they're going to have defensive reinforcement too, which is something I don't think you get out of Alexis and Ozil as we have it now. Plus, that would shield Xhaka, that gives him a lot of room because he's going to have guys around him that can protect him. And, I mean, then all you really have to do is just retool that front three, almost tell Ramsey to attack more than he normally does, as if we need to. But I think that that midfield is so solid and so believable, really, because I do think that Goretzka's primary choice right now would be Arsenal. I mean, Kolasinac is here. Kolasinac came from Schalke just the exact same way this past summer. And I don't think there's many teams out there, whether it's United or Barcelona, that have this opening that Goretzka could just walk right into. I mean, he could walk right into the Arsenal first team because there's going to be an opening for him. And those other teams, I don't think, would offer him that. I think that there's going to be that, oh, you could work your way into it. But at Arsenal, it's if you want it, you can have it.
Yeah, I think, I guess that formation probably actually isn't that different to what Arsenal are playing now.
Yeah.
When you have Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil as such free-roaming kind of attacking players, and I guess he essentially just replaced them with Ramsey and Goretzka and another defensive midfielder, probably slightly more centralised and slightly more robust, I think that's fair to say. I think you'd be mad to not want Goretzka to come to Arsenal.
Yeah.
He's a brilliant player, and he's only 22, like you said, so he's only going to get better. He's the type of player who you can build a team around, and there aren't many players like that. He could feasibly be at his next club for a decade and be the absolute beating heart of that team for the whole of that decade. Very much like a Steven Gerrard or a Frank Lampard type player, where you are able to completely construct everything around them and found everything on his abilities. Whether that will happen or not, I guess only time will tell. I'd love him to join, but, you know, this is Arsenal, and
He did say that by the end of January he will have made his decision, so that's a hell of a lot sooner than I thought it was when I looked at the calendar the other day and realized we're only a month away from potentially knowing where Goretzka is going to spend his next phase of his career.
Yeah, and let's hope that it is in North London. But Arsenal, as Arsenal do, I'm sure they'll find a way to screw this up as well.
Although it has to be said, you know, when they wanted Granit Xhaka, they had him locked up early.
Yeah, that's true.
And when they wanted Sead Kolasinac, they had him locked up very early. I'd like to believe that they already are very, you know, close with Goretzka. They've spoken to him, that they've had these interactions already, and that, you know, the offer's on the table. So I do think that if there's one thing they handle well, it's when they know they need something and there's a really good option there. And obviously with the Mislintat and Senyehi, or however you say it, I think that that's only going to make their case stronger than it was before. Obviously,
yeah. No, I think that's fair enough. Anything else? Anything more to say on this topic before we wrap up?
No. No, let's just, you know, get past the damn Thursday game, because I can't remember a time where I've been less interested in an Arsenal match.
Yeah, not ideal, but but there we go. So I guess that just leaves me to wrap it up. So I hope you enjoyed the fifth episode of Pain in the Arsenal podcast. Unfortunately, our streak has ended. Arsenal had won every game since we started until Saturday.
Maybe Henry is the reason.
Maybe Henry, yes, yes.
Fate,
yeah. So when
fate
Henry
knew
comes back,
that he wouldn't be here.
Yeah,
we lost.
Yeah. So when Henry comes back next Monday, Arsenal will have beaten Southampton 7-0. clearly, he is the magic man. We will be with you next Monday. We will review the Southampton game. We'll look forward to, I think it's West Ham, isn't it, in the week?
Yes.
Which is, perhaps more tricky tie than it was a couple of weeks back. Thank you for listening. Check us out on paininthearsenal.com. Check us out on iTunes and on Stitcher and wherever you may get your podcasts. And we will see you soon. Goodbye.